Russians are paying a price for the invasion of Ukraine. Basic goods are becoming more expensive as the value of the ruble falls and economic sanctions start to bite. But could the rest of the world be affected as well? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. So, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has triggered some of the most severe sanctions ever from the West. They're designed to hurt Russia's economy and deprive President Vladimir Putin of money to pay for the war. The currency, the ruble, has fallen by a third against the US dollar. Some Russian banks have been banned from the SWIFT messaging system used for international transactions. The United States, the European Union and their allies are blocking access to much of the country's $640 billion in foreign cash reserves. Russia's central bank is trying to limit the fallout by raising interest rates to 20%. The Kremlin insists the country will ride out the pain, but the fear has caused a run on the banks.
Since Thursday, everyone has been running between ATMs to withdraw cash. Someone gets lucky, others not so lucky.
It's not clear how we will be buying groceries and other stuff if SWIFT is turned off. All foreign goods are paid for by card. How will we purchase them? I work in a department store. How will it buy clothes from Italy, I wonder? I don't know how other areas will be affected. Everything is working in Russia, but there could be some shortages.
It won't affect me at all because I'm not too rich. I'm an average earner. It will affect our country, I think, but we will overcome it all.
Well, of course, the sanctions could have an impact outside of Russia as well. The world's 11th biggest economy is a major exporter of fuel and food. The war could push up prices globally. Let's take a closer look. Well, Russia produces 10% of the world's oil. As the West warned of a Russian invasion back in November, prices were nearly $85 a barrel. Now they are more than $100 a barrel and rising. Moscow supplies 40% of Europe's natural gas. Prices on the continent have increased by a third since Thursday, when the invasion began. Russia is the world's largest wheat exporter. Prices last year were already 31% higher than in 2020. That's according to the UN's Food and Agriculture Agency. Economists fear they could climb even higher. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Moscow, we have Pavel Felgenhauer, a defence and military analyst. In Shanghai, in China, Dan Wang, a chief economist at the Hang Seng Bank, China. And in London, Jeevan Sander, who's an economist at King's College London. Welcome, all of you, to the programme. First up, I just want to focus on the situation within Russia for now. We'll look at the global situation in a few minutes. But Pavel Felgenhauer, Vladimir Putin says he's indifferent to sanctions. Is that true, do you think?
Well, Russia was preparing, obviously, that there can be further sanctions. Actually, Russia has been under sanctions for already 8 years, since 14, and more were coming, and so there were reserves made of different things, I mean, of chips and components to make planes and other materials. And of course, Russia, with the price of oil being high and the price of natural gas too, made large hard currency reserves. And it was believed that Russia could weather the storm, that sanctions would have some effect further on, but not immediate. It turns out differently. The West agreed very promptly to freeze the assets of the central bank, and that was a shock and awe event.
Right. So what are the implications of that? Because those hard currency reserves you talked about have been pretty much halved, haven't they? So he loses access to much of the $640 billion that was there. What's going to be the impact of that?
Well, it's not only that belongs to the central bank as reserve. It's also the sovereign fund, which is under the custodianship of the central bank. So, and that's also in foreign currency. So that means the central bank does not have the capability to support the ruble by using those reserves. They have been frozen. And actually, there's reports that not only in euros, dollars, sterling, and apparently yen, actually, Switzerland, the neutral country, apparently is also looking into freezing Russian assets. So it would be the franc too. That's not good at all. So today Moscow, there was panic in the city. The ruble was in free fall. The central bank moved in and somewhat managed to stabilize the situation.
Okay, we'll come into the situation within Moscow in just a second, Pavel. Sorry to interrupt, but I just want to move it on. We'll come back to you in a second about what's happening on the streets. Dan Wang, outside of China, have you been surprised by the level of sanctions finally being imposed now on Russia?
I'm actually not that surprised. Gathering all the political signals in the market from Europe and the US, it just seems it will happen that way. The SWIFT is used, and in my line of business, it's considered as a nuclear option in the financial world. Mm-hmm. But energy products are still in exemption. So I just don't think the pain would be big enough to deter Russia yet. There has to be more of a consistent behavior and alliance between Western countries in order to cause the real damage they want to see.
Jeevan Sander, what do you think? Do you think there needs to be more effort to up the level of sanctioning going on?
I actually think these sanctions are clear, punitive, and overwhelming. We should be clear that as of this morning, the Russian economy is in crisis. The ruble is crashing. Inflation will increase. Bank runs we are also seeing. Russia is fundamentally much poorer this morning than it was yesterday. These sanctions will have a huge and damaging effect. And one of the ironies, of course, of this is because Putin spent since 2014 insulating the Russian economy from his Western neighbours by selling very little debt abroad, by restricting imports, by trying to build that reserve. It also means these sanctions are going to have relatively less effect on Western economies. Putin gambled everything on this card of invading Ukraine. He thought he had a war chest ready. It's clear that is no longer the case. He went all in, and it looks like he's about to lose very badly.
Right. So, Pavel, the ruble, as you were just saying, the ruble has bombed. Let's home in now on the impact that that is going to have on the lives of the men and women on the street. What will it do to the cost of living for the 145 million people in Russia?
Well, as I said, the central bank right now today stepped in. They managed to stabilize the situation. There was even a rebalance of the ruble. Medicine is very, very bitter. They have risen their basic lending rate from 9.5% to 20%. 20% means that the Russian industry is going to tank. Normal industry can't work at such a rate. Only, I don't know, speculative trading in the black market can. That means there's going to be a recession in Russia. There's going to be a severe economic recession, and that's going to hit the population very seriously. There's going to be shortages because there's going to be a problem with imports, and not only because of money, because Russia is still selling oil and getting some money, that is not frozen. But there's logistical problems. Logistical companies are refusing to bring containers to Russia. And we won't having bananas, but we also won't having, I say, precursors to make generic medicines. And everything is going to go, and that's going to be, all of it, in sum, is going to affect very badly the internal political situation. There's going to be serious discontent in the coming months, and that will coupled with a war that seems not very popular and not very successful.
Right. I was going to come on to that. What do you think? What sense are you getting from people, the people you know, the people you chat to in the shops and so forth, about what's going on and what's happened as a result of these sanctions, you know, ultimately as a result of Vladimir Putin's decision to invade?
Well, I mean, right now people are in shock because their gadgets are not working. This is not working. So people are trying to get something, buy something, do something, or just simply are sitting and in frustration because their lives are kind of crumbling about them. Moscovites were traveling a lot abroad. Now there are also no Russian planes around anywhere. The Russian foreign minister couldn't go to Geneva, ordinary people also can't go anywhere. So this is a kind of very serious frustration. There is some anti-war movement. It's not yet very big, but it is there. And that's also eating into the internal political stability. If these things, right now, it's not yet a political problem for the Kremlin, but it can soon become, because all these things will be adding up.
Right.
And people are, of course, frustrated, asking me questions, what comes next? And I don't have any good news for them. It could be much worse.
Jeevan Sander in London, to what extent can Russia fight back? Because we've heard in the last few hours about Russia closing its airspace for 36-odd countries. That's going to have repercussions across the world, isn't it?
It will do. The real damaging weapon that Russia has, of course, is, as you've mentioned, a huge amount of energy exports, the second largest producer of natural gas. Here in London, 40% of our electricity comes from energy. We know that much of the gas in the European Union as well does come from Russia. But whilst it can try to restrict those exports, we should remember that Russia also needs to export that in order to have dollars come into the country and not see the ruble crash further. It needs those dollars. Russia's economic sanctions back to the Western world, if you like, outside of energy and wheat, are very limited. And even with energy and wheat, it's very difficult to see how effectively they could deploy it, given how badly they need at this point in time US dollars. It doesn't look like the Russian economy or Russian government here has a huge amount of maneuver by which to strike back at Western nations.
Yes, indeed. Just as we emerge from the pandemic crisis, we walk straight into this kind of storm cloud of war, don't we? Dan Wang in Shanghai, with your financier's hat on, if you like, how far reaching do you think the consequences of Russia's invasion of Ukraine will be for the world and indeed for us all, wherever we may live?
Well, I think for a country like Ukraine, its economy probably will have to be put back by at least 5 years just due to this war. But for the rest of the world, unfortunately, I think the economic impact will be quite drastic in the beginning, but quickly fade off. Right now, we see a lot of adjustment in the stock market and people are rushing to the safe assets. But judging by historical experience, say the period after the Gulf War or period after 9/11, the markets will return to normal, usually between 1 to 6 months. And right now, we see actually many countries see more opportunities to strengthen their bond with Russia, including China. So it's not the case for like Iran or Cuba that they're very isolated from the rest of the world. Russia still has friends and allies from other parts of the world.
But if, we've been talking about wheat supply, Russia is the biggest supplier of wheat in the world. If that is hit badly, it's going to affect the basic commodity of bread, isn't it? And that is going to have repercussions around the world. It's not something that's just going to, evaporate once the invasion stops or they come to some sort of agreement, if they do. And this might drag on for months.
Well, food security is certainly a prime concern, but the impact, again, is quite uneven. For countries in Middle East and North Africa, they depend more heavily on Russian and Ukraine supply, especially in wheat and rapeseed seeds. So we will see some disproportionate impact for the poor people in those countries. If you look at a country like Turkey, the inflation pressure is already very high. And I just can see that more people would have to suffer from high living costs in the months to come.
Jeevan, what do you think? How do you think the sanctions on Russia will reverberate across the world, global economy? Really, for the man and woman on the street from Kenya to London.
So, yeah, it's certainly true to whatever extent people are exposed to Russian financial assets, we are going to see some kind of repercussion. We've seen stock markets down slightly this morning. Similarly, the same is true if Russia decides to offload its dollars-denominated debt, for example. But the more severe question is really about to what extent energy prices as well as food prices are affected. That's what matters for people on the street. Now, we had a threat from Medvedev a few days ago saying that he would cause the price of gas to increase by more than double. In the UK, that would mean another increase of energy prices of about £1,000 for the average family, another 3 points on inflation. At the same time, we're seeing across the OECD, certainly, inflation spiking and living standards fall. Inside the UK, we've seen the biggest fall, or will see this year, for working households, the biggest fall in after-tax income for 30 years. And we're seeing those pressures, of course, everywhere. So the real question here is what happens to those energy exports and what happens to those food exports?
Pavel, what do you think? I mean, that threat from Medvedev to put a squeeze on gas flow and push up the price, is that something that you will see come into play?
Actually, I don't know. Today, there, President Putin and the Kremlin had a meeting on sanctions and Russian response. The results are not yet known. This is maybe a possibility. But again, of course, that is a dangerous weapon, because if Russia begins to squeeze gas supplies, the West will begin to squeeze Gazprom. And that Gazprom has assets in the West, even has natural gas in Western Europe and in Central Europe and underground facilities, which could be confiscated. I don't know. There's the cutting off supply of oil and gas was a very dangerous weapon. There's going to be a lot of consideration before using that. Of course, the first reaction by President Putin was actually to threaten, brandish the nuclear weapon. And he announced the kind of that the level of readiness, I mean, the equivalent of the American DEFCON, has been lifted. And so basically Russia is saying, if you impose sanctions on us, we can maybe begin to use nukes. Actually, it's possible that a nuclear weapon could be exploded somewhere in a safe in a place, like an over the seas, empty sea somewhere in the North Sea, in the Norwegian Sea or the Atlantic, where it won't cause any harm, as a demonstration of Russian determination. Because such things have been kind of proposed and tested without explosion, of course, in Russian military exercises beginning from the 90s. It's called de-escalation through nuclear escalation, a demonstrative nuclear attack.
That sounds like a risky game to me.
Neutral target. And that's a possibility right now. We should consider that and how that will have a reaction on world markets.
Indeed. Dan Wang, well, let me ask you about that. What do you make of that, first of all?
I think it's an incredible threat. Of course, the military power is quite obvious for Russia. But the real question is, what does Russia want out of this war with Ukraine? The economic sanctions pretty much is anticipated before it started this war. And the bottom line is, the power that Western countries exert on Russia can also be the Western countries' vulnerability. For Europe to cut off its energy ties with Russia, it cannot be very long. It has to be a temporary solution, because Europe really depends on Russia for the energy supply. And for the U.S., it can certainly kick out Russia from the SWIFT system, but that means a weakening position for dollar-denominated global order. So now it just leaves all countries in this tricky balance. And I don't think Russia will necessarily lose in this battle and in this negotiation. Eventually, maybe the trade relations between Russia and China will get closer and probably will get more political power from Europe as well.
And Dan, how do you think China fits into this tricky balance, as you describe it? Because earlier this month, Putin held talks with Xi Jinping, where the two leaders declared this sort of unending friendship with no limits and no forbidden areas of cooperation. Do you think that's strained now?
Well, Russia is part of the Belt and Road Initiative countries, and there are already a lot of collaboration on the ground, in infrastructure, in technology, e-commerce, things like that. There's even the currency swap system. And in times like this, a friendlier face in China would be a great support for Russia. And already we have seen more talks on the ground between different trade representatives from China and from Russia. So it is more opportunities for China to gain in this situation, and for Russia as well, maybe to pursue a different path for its future growth.
All right, Jeevan, London is well known for its links to Russian money, isn't it? What about the mass ranks of oligarchs? Will they always have Putin's back? We've seen Roman Abramovich, he's stepped back from his ownership of Chelsea Football Club. A couple of others beginning to speak out against war. What do you think that might represent?
It certainly looks like oligarchs, their own kind of interests may no longer align with Putin. We know, for example, the British government is looking at seizing Putin-linked oligarch property in London. I've just seen the French are considering similar actions. So certainly oligarchs may start to think about kind of diverging from Putin. I suppose on the other side, though, we've also seen danger from those oligarchs who do decide to leave Putin. And fundamentally, what will determine his survival is whether or not he still has the backing of the security and the armed forces. We should remember dictators like Maduro can survive in office if they make sure they have, you know, the support of the men with guns. So fundamentally for Putin, whilst the oligarchs may leave him or more of them may think about it, what it's really about is what is his position and support within his own armed forces.
Pavel Felgenhauer, what's your assessment of Vladimir Putin's position in the coming months, given that we're beginning to hear, from the oligarchs suggesting that perhaps that this war was ill-advised? Is that something that may grow and burgeon and add to that unrest on the streets that you were talking about a little bit earlier?
Well, there is, of course, it will be unrest. There will be economic frustration of large parts of the Russian population. But that's, of course, not enough at all to kind of bring any kind of substantial change in regime or substantially change Russian political objectives, the Kremlin political objectives. What should be added that it should be widespread discontent within the security apparatus, yes, the military, and actually the civilian bureaucracy, which is also very important in Russia. That's how things begin to change in Russia when such changes happen. As I say, this war is not very popular, and it's not apparently very popular with the Russian military. Too, there were dissenting voices and signals coming from there that this is the wrong thing to do. And it doesn't seem that maybe in some instances the Russian military are not fighting to full capacity or at least maybe holding back, maybe under orders, or maybe that they don't want to fight this war very much. So it's a complicated situation. The Putin's regime may begin to wobble in the coming months. Will there be any change or not? Again, that's anybody's question. Before it begins to happen, it's very hard to predict. But the security, the military have to at least look the other way if popular discontent can begin to change anything in Russia.
Okay. Jeevan, I'd like to end with you, if I may. If hostilities were to end and some agreement was reached, how quickly could things economically in Russia, around the world, get back on track, or is this, set in train a long-term potential recession?
Well, I mean, I think Russia at this point will face some kind of recession, at least in the short term. If it is the case that relations were to go back to normal, you'd think they'd be able to, in some sense, recover. But also, let's think about what the long-term implications would still be. Europe would very much be looking to decouple their natural gas from Russia and Putin in any case. There would be, you think now, more of a push to net zero. There will be a complete change in relationships, especially while Putin is still the leader in Russia. And more broadly, it's very difficult to see a situation in which our dealings with Russia will be normalised while Vladimir Putin is still leader. We can't go back to where we were 10 days ago.
Interesting. Thank you all for joining us. We've run out of time. Do appreciate all your perspectives on this very important story. Pavel Felgenhauer, Dan Wang and Jeevan Sander, thanks very much indeed. And thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here at Al Jazeera, it's goodbye for now.